We say good morning at JM in the AM and remind you that our 9 days format will continue, with the centerpiece being the Lectures of Rivero Wine, the series that we have embarked on to open up our 9 days format is entitled Jewish Values, and this one is called Peace.
Tonight's lecture concerns itself with shalom, which is one of the universal values of Judaism. And as we saw with Drochea Darchei Noam, with pleasantness, when we're speaking about universal values, it cuts across the whole spectrum of Jewish life. It influences halacha, and it is also meant naturally to influence human behavior, to set the standard, the bar, for what a Jew is supposed to be. Now, the word shalom, as we understand it, usually is translated in English as peace. But to a certain extent, that's a minimal translation of the word. The word shalom is from the word shalem, which means to be whole. It really means more harmony than it means peace. Our understanding of peace is pretty much an absence of Katyusha rockets. But the idea of shalom that is represented in the Torah and represented in Chazal is far deeper than that. It's an idea of harmony, of an inner harmony, of a person that's at peace, so to speak, with oneself. It's like harmony in a symphony orchestra or in a musical piece. So you have many different instruments and many different sounds, and sometimes the sounds almost clash, and yet there's a harmony to it that gives it a beauty and gives it a sense of spiritual uplift. Well, that's the type of shalom that the Torah describes here. It's a harmony within oneself, because we are all made up of different pieces, and somehow that has to have a harmonious whole. And it's a harmony in a family where different personalities exist. I had a friend who unfortunately lived all of his life being a bachelor, and always said he couldn't see himself devoting the rest of his life to a stranger, which is one way of looking at it. But harmony in a family is to be able to live, so to speak, with strangers, with people who are different than you are, have different needs, different personality, even perhaps different outlook on things. It's certainly not meant to be a conformity. And that's certainly true regarding children, where each child is a world unto himself or herself. And then we have peace in the community, peace in the synagogue, sense of harmony. So again, you're dealing with all sorts of different personalities, ideas, temperaments. And then when we raise it to the national and international level, and peace between nations, peace between faiths, peace between cultures, so then again we're looking somehow to be able to live in harmony, accepting the other. And because of that, therefore, that requires an effort, more than an effort. It requires an attitude on the part of anyone that wants to truly achieve peace. So the rabbis defined it early in the book, in the Talmud. They took the pasuk in Tanakh and they said that this is the definition of peace. Ein shalom amar Hashem l'rishoyim. An evil person is incapable of ever achieving harmony. So they equated peace, harmony, with goodness, with not doing evil. And the pasuk says, v'rishoyim kayom nigrosh. The evil people are like a sea, a raging torrent. The waves push up against the shore. They are never stop. They're never at rest. And this harmonious whole is based upon the idea that a person wants to be a good person. Now, Chazal say a cryptic idea, Gimel Shlomo say, there are three types of peace. Nohor, a river, Tzipor, a bird, Kedera, a pot or a kettle. Rabbi Feldman, Aaron Feldman, the Rosh Yeshiva of Baltimore, wrote a interesting book called The River, the Bird, and the Kettle. Since no one could figure out the title, everyone bought the book. But the book is about these three types of peace. And each one represents this kind of harmony. There's a harmony that is like a river that flows, that makes its way, that carries others with it. That kind of a harmony requires the ability to accept within it all sorts of different material. Anyone who has seen the Mississippi River when it emanates into the Gulf of Mexico, so it has taken the mud and the dirt and the silt of the American continent from where it began up in Minnesota all the way down. It carries it all with it. And that's the idea of a river. A river accepts. It takes things with it. It doesn't never is interrupted in its flow. A river is also able to make new channels. It finds its way. It gets stopped up in one place. In the American Civil War, the Union Army tried to dam the Mississippi in a few places in order to be able to conquer the Confederate stronghold of Vicksburg, and all of their efforts failed because the Mississippi found another way to go around. A river, no matter how we try to change or stop it, always finds its course, always somehow is able to come on. And that's the idea of peace. The Shalom is a nohor. It's a river. The drive for the harmony within a person and the drive for peace is of such a nature that even if it's blocked, it will find another channel. Because it's a, as the rabbi saw it, it's an innate, instinctive part of being human. A human being desires it. And therefore, it will flow. It will come. And the idea of the bird is also the same thing. The rabbi said that a bird is able to fly above things. What does that mean? A bird, we say in English, or you have a bird's eye view. A bird's eye view means you see things from the top. You see it in perspective. Most of the time, in anger or in war or in other events that are not pleasant and are not peaceful, is because things are seen in their immediate state. They're seen almost in a two-dimensional state. But if they would be seen from above, if they would be seen with a historical perspective, if they'd be seen, so to speak, the way God sees it from heaven, so then peace is much easier to obtain. We're able to deal with it in a sense that we see a broader picture, a deeper perspective. If you see things superficially, not the way a bird, but the way we see it from ground level, so then you miss much. All of the sporting events that appear on television today are all taken from an upper level, right? Simply because of the fact that otherwise you miss what's going on. So that was the bird. And the pot, now the pot has many interpretations. But the one that strikes home to me is the fact that you need a pot in order to cook things. You can have all the meat and potatoes and carrots and everything in the world, but if you have no pot to put it in, so then it's very, very difficult to prepare the food. But a pot is the container. Peace, harmony is seen as a container. And we'll see that the rabbis say, Lo motza HaKadosh Baruch Hu keli marzik brocho ela hasholom. God never found anything that could contain all the blessings. I'll give somebody all the blessings of the world. Health and wealth, family, success, popularity, good looks. But without peace, the person is ruined. Nothing brings satisfaction. That's why you see many times that some of the most successful people in the world are some of the most unsuccessful people in the world. They're not at peace. They have no sense of harmony, no sense of purpose. So Sholom was seen as a pot. And Chazal say the same idea about Yiras Shamayim. It says, Yiras Shamayim hi otsoro, that a person that has fear of heaven, so he has the treasure, he has the bag. I always use the example, I remember the first time I came to Israel. So when I came to Israel almost 40 years ago, none of the grocery stores gave you a bag to take your purchases home. And I come from the United States where, you know, they not only they give you a bag, they have somebody there to bag it for you, and they take it out to the car for you. And, yes, sir. Come back again, sir. So I'm on Alice in Wonderland here. And so, I don't know, I bought 10 items, 12 items, and it's lying on the counter. And I'm looking at him, and he's looking at me. And I say to him, he says, you got to bring your own bags. We don't give bags here. So you can imagine, I put the sour cream in my pocket, and and the milk in my shirt pocket. Can you imagine what it looked like at the end? But that's the interpretation, right? You can have all the blessings, but you don't have a bag to take it home in. If you don't have a container for it, so then you're pretty much lost. So the Mishnah says, Lo motza HaKadosh Baruch Hu keli marzik brocha. Rabbeinu Shalom, look to give us a bag. Look to give us something that we could take everything with us with. And in Lo motza el hasholom, the only thing that he found was peace, was harmony. That a person should have that sense of well-being that Shalom brings. And that's why one of the names of God, so to speak, in Hebrew is Shalom. One of the questions is, if you have a doormat, and on it says Shalom, so it's not necessarily correct to have the doormat, because then people step on it, hopefully, and they're stepping on the name of God. So God put his name, so to speak, in this concept of Shalom. That's how important it is. So when we say Shalom, we say harmony, we're saying God. Because God is the ultimate harmony, the ultimate reconciler of all things. We know, we say it in our prayers often, Talmidei Chachomim Marbim Shalom Bo'olam. That the scholars of Israel bring about a great deal of peace. Well, without being too heretical, many times that's not easy to see. Because many times you see that between the Talmidei Chachomim themselves, there are vast differences of opinion, sometimes even stronger than differences of opinion. Where's the Marbim Shalom Bo'olam? So my father-in-law, blessed memory, always used to say on this that this is not a statement. It's a challenge. The task of a Talmud Chacham, the task of a knowledgeable Jew, is whether he increases peace in the world or not. Whether or not within himself, within his family, within his community, within his synagogue, are things better because of him? Are they more peaceful? Do people get along better? Is there a quieter atmosphere? Or is it all the time? So Talmidei Chachomim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam is the challenge. And it's an especially important challenge to a Talmid Chacham, because of the fact that he has the equipment, he has the knowledge of Torah that is supposed to bring this about. And therefore the rabbis say in the Gemara, Esvohe Basufo, commenting on those three words that are part of the song that appears in Chumash Bamidbar. So it says that Talmid Chachomim argue with each other. The Talmud agrees that they should argue with each other because that's how we come to decisions. That's how we air all the opinions. That's how we gain our knowledge. It's the give and take. You look through the Talmud. The Talmud is 75-80% arguments, discussions, disagreements. But the end is as voe basufo. And the Gemara says they don't leave the Beis HaMedrash Achenasu Oavim Zeloze, Vohev from the word Oev, till they become lovers of each other. So it's the ability to hear different opinions and to respect and even love the person that has it, even if you feel that his opinion is incorrect. And that's a level of challenge that is not easily met. I remember Rabbi Kreisworth, of blessed memory, so in the yeshiva, when he would say to Shear, once in a while he would make a statement, and someone would argue with the statement, and then they'd argue back and forth at the top of their lungs, and then he would stop in the middle, and he would say, listen, he said, you may be right, but I have to teach today, so leave me alone. I'll talk to you afterwards. And that, like, released all the tension. Because of the fact that you can have two opinions and still love each other. If you're able to rise above it. If you're able to be that kind of a person. But in the viciousness of personality, especially in the political and power reigns, so then all of that gets lost. And the society suffers thereby. Now, Chazal said that it's not enough. We have the example, who is the champion peacemaker in the world? The role model, the paradigm of a peacemaker, that we learn what peace means. So that's Aaron HaKohen. Having the Talmid of Shalaron, Hillel said, always be a student of Aaron. Oev Shalom, Aaron loved peace. Rodev Shalom, he pursued peace. Oev Esabrios, he loved people. Mekorvan LaTorah, and he brought them close to Torah. Now, Aaron HaKohen built the eagle. Aaron HaKohen is the contributing factor to the fact that the Jews constructed the golden calf. The rabbi saw in that a warning. Like all measures in the Torah, like all characteristics in the Torah, there's a balance here. To go to extremes is dangerous. Aaron doesn't want to fight with the Jewish people. They want to build an eagle. So he's a nice guy. Let's build an eagle. Bring me your jewelry. Take the golden earrings. And bring them here and we'll make an eagle, and you know, and everybody will be happy. Moshe, who is his brother, who is a far sterner material, Moshe comes down, he grinds the eagle into dust, he makes them drink it, he kills 3,000 Jews, he burns it all down. Moshe saved the Jewish people. Aaron pays a heavy penalty in his own personal life. All of his life he bears that burden. Yet, Aaron remains the symbol of peace. Because again, in order to achieve peace, you need those characteristics of Aaron. But you also need Moshe to balance that. Because in every situation, and not in every situation does that fit, right? Chazal say, Abol lehorgo chashkein vorgeyu. We are not pacifists at all causes, you know, in all circumstances. That's suicidal. But What we do learn from Aaron is Oev Shalom, to love peace, even if I don't have it yet. And Bake Shalom V'rod Feil, it says in the Pasuk. You have to search for it and you have to actively pursue it. It is not a passive matter. It is something that has to be actively pursued. And therefore, Chazal say, on Bake Shalom V'rod Feil, Baksheu Bimkomcha V'rod Feil B'mokam Acher. Try and find it in your place, and if you can't find it, then pursue it somewhere else. The Rambam says regarding that, that if a person lives in a community that's very contentious, that's full of divisions, full of quarrels, he should move. The Rambam generally is in favor of moving. He says if you're in a place where they don't let you observe the Torah, move. The Rambam's solution to the problems that beset us is to find ourselves a different environment. He almost despairs of one person changing the environment. So here also, you're in a place that's querulous, that everybody is fighting, everybody, move, leave. That's Bakei Sholom V'rod Feil, pursue it somewhere else. Because person lives in a contentious environment that has an effect upon that person. In the pasuk we read, Shalom v'emes nivgoshu, truth and peace have met. Now we all know that truth and peace are antagonistic one to another. Right? Somebody asks you, how do you like my new suit? It's terrible. Looks awful. Peace will not exist between us. And that's on a minor issue. On major issues, it certainly is. So which should trump? Which should win? Whether we should have, it's better to have peace or better to have absolute truth. In the history of the Jewish people, there have been groups that have wavered. Sometimes in favor of truth, and sometimes in favor of peace. The great Kotzker Rebbe, and Menachem Mendel Morgenstern, so he was a great devotee of truth. So he would get up Rosh Hashanah before the sounding of the shofar, and deliver his Rosh Hashanah sermon, which went something like this. Ganovim, Rotzchim, Menoachim, thieves, murderers, immoral people. According to legend, people jumped out of the window of the Beis Medrash. It was a one-story building. They jumped out of the window of the Beis Medrash because they couldn't take it. Well, he didn't have to have his contract renewed, so he could afford to say. But that's the truth, right? Reuben Begezel. Most people are caught with money that's not theirs. So that's emes. Emes burns. Shalom. Shalom is the ability to overlook emes. How do you like my suit? Oh, that's a very nice suit. Wear it in good health. And you look very good in purple. We're talking to a man. So who wins? So the Gemara says two remarkable things. The Gemara says, you see that the Torah itself voted for peace over truth in two instances. It says the Torah Kosav Divrei Badoi, the Torah wrote words that are not true in order to preserve, to show you that peace should be preserved at the expense of truth. First incident is Avraham and Sarah. God comes to Sora and he tells her, you know, you're going to have a child. Sora's 90 years old. So she laughs. And she says to herself, Achrei velosi oiso li edna, after I have become so withered, all of a sudden I will become refreshed, I'll become young again. And even if it happens to me, v'adoni zokein, he's an old man. What good's it do to... He's old. He's too old to have father or child. When the Lord repeats the conversation to Avraham, God says, Lomozet tzochak o Sora leimor. Why did Sora laugh? Why did she doubt? And she said that she wouldn't be able to have a child. God did not tell him the second part of the sentence. He did not tell him. And she said, you're an old man. Which human beings would love to say to the person. God didn't say that. He omits it. Why? Because he knew that Avraham would feel badly, and he would then have a complaint to Sora, and she'd have a complaint back to him, and then... Godol HaShalom. Great is peace in the house. The second incident is by Yosef. The brothers, after their father Yaakov died, the brothers came to Yosef and they said, Avicho tzivo lifnei moso leimor, your father before he died told us to tell you, you should be nice to us. Don't take revenge for what we did to you. Sono pesha achecho. He never said that, Yaakov. Either because of many interpretations, either because he was unaware of the story, or if he was aware of the story, he thought that it was over. So the Torah wrote that. So now the Torah doesn't write things that are not true, even if they're quoting somebody. Every word in the Torah is emes, is true. So why did the Torah write an untruth? Why did it write something that is not true? Because of Sholem. Because then the brothers, Yosef saw how deeply the brothers were still affected by the matter. Therefore, he reconciled himself fully to them. He wept and he said, would I do anything to you? So the Torah itself, in these two instances, went out of its way to show you that the value of peace, of harmony, is sometimes greater than the value of truth. And that therefore the Talmud says that it's possible that the Torah allows us to tell less than the truth, not just a white lie, but a full lie, in order to preserve truth, in order to preserve peace, rather. The only instance where we find that the Torah departs from its strict rule that a person should be truthful. A person's word means something. So we see the overriding value of what it is to retain a peaceful environment, both in the home and in the community. Chazal expanded on that idea. A famous story in the Talmud that a husband was angry at a wife, a whole story between them, and he accused her of something, and she said no, and then the test was that if she went and she spat at Rabbi Meir, then they would be reconciled. So she came to the Beis Medrash, and she spat at Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir knew the story. And she spat at him. And he allowed it to happen. So his Talmidim, his students, said to him, Rabbi, kach mevazin Torah. That's how you let Torah be ashamed, that a woman from the street, because she's got a problem, should come and spit at you? And you should let it happen? And Rav Meir answered. He said, we have a halacha of sota, of a woman that's suspected of infidelity. Part of the process of the sota was that they took a parchment that had this parsha written on it, and included in this parsha was the ineffable name of God, the four-letter name of God. And they took the parsha and they dipped it in water. The water dissolved the ink from the parsha so that God's name was erased, so to speak. So Rav Meir said, look, if God is willing to allow his name to be erased so that there can be harmony in the family between this husband and wife, so then who is Rav Meir not to allow himself to undergo what looks like an embarrassment, an insult, in order to bring peace about between a husband and wife? And that concept reverberates throughout the Talmud, that a person has to allow himself. I remember I was once at a convention, a large convention of a Jewish organization in the United States, and I was there with one of the great great men of that generation, and he knew that when he would enter the hall, everyone would stand up for him. And there was a younger man who was having all sorts of problems. He wasn't respected in his community, he was having marital problems, etc. And so the great rabbi said to me, go over and fetch that man, bring him here. And when he came, so he took him by the arm and he marched in together with him. So when everybody stood up, he told him, he said, your wife will see that everybody stands up for you. You'll see that'll help. She'll have more of an understanding because everybody stands up for you. So the understanding of the matter, so when I drove him home later, I said to him, but you know, Rebbe, it's not honest. If he would have walked in by himself, nobody would have stood up for him, right? He looked at me and he said, this is Gemara. He said, honest up there. I'm better than Rav Meir. Rav Meir is better than the Rebbeinu Shalalem. If you can help in a domestic dispute, if you can help somehow to patch it up, so then, you know, so what do you mean honest? You have to be willing to somehow have your name erased in the waters in order that peace should prevail. So it's such an overriding value that's the bakei shalom rodfeo, that's the pursuit of peace. You got to look for a way to make it. So the man didn't come to him and say, can I walk in with you? It'll help me. But he knew the situation. And he knew that it would help him. And therefore, he pursued it. He said, go fetch him. Go bring him here to me. We're going to walk in together. So we'll be able to stand up. And you'll see that it'll have a salutary effect upon your wife. And that will help in the matter of shalom. We have a concept in halacha called darkei shalom, the path of peace. So the rabbis made tikkunos because of darkei shalom. For instance, in our relationship with the non-Jewish world. So not just the non-Jewish world, but the pagan world. The difference. With a world that worships idols. The rabbis said you have to support their poor. Can't say, well, if I support them, it only contributes to more paganism. The rabbi said that you have to bury their dead. You have to heal their sick. You have to clothe their naked. We are responsible, because that's Darkei Sholem. That's the harmony in the world. And the fact that you want to limit it to yourself, that was not part of it. That was not allowed. And the rabbi said that that's why the Gemara says, Lomo Nivro Adam Yechidi. Why was original man created only one? I mean, why didn't God start the world with a million people? Why did he start it with one? And he said, the rabbi said, Al Yomar Odom Lechaveiro Ato Godol Me'avicho, I'm greater than your father. I'm a Miyuchas. I'm greater than you are. But we're all equal. And that was really Jefferson and the Declaration of Independence mentions that he took that phrase from an old Judaic book, that all men are created equal. They're all created equal, which is the basis of somehow achieving peace. Not only are we, because of Darkei Sholem, to treat pagans and to extend to them a sense of belonging, so to speak. I used to notice in Muncie, when I was the Rav there, that on Purim, when poor people came to collect money, some of them weren't Jewish. So people used to complain to me, how come you're letting them into the shul? I would always quote this Gemara to them, right? Darkei Sholem, right? We're responsible. If he comes, you have to give money. You have to give it to him. The halacha on Purim is called Aposhet Yad Nosim Lo. Whoever sticks out his hand, you have to give. So that's the idea of Sholem, of harmony, of not to differentiate. So the rabbi stretched it even to Jews who worship paganism, which is worse than pagans who worship paganism. The rabbi said, Godol HaSholom, great is peace. Look how great peace is. Shafilu Yisroel Ovdim Avodah Zorah. The Jewish people worship Avodah Zorah. V'Sholom Beineihem. But they live good with each other, right? The Gemara says this regarding the generation of Achav. The Gemara asks as follows.
WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, WNYX Montgomery, around the world on the web, jmam.org, Rockland County at 91.9 on the FM dial.
Achav, who was the king of Israel, the persecutor of Eliyahu HaNavi, who is not ranked very high amongst the righteous, and he worshipped Avodah Zorah, he did everything wrong. But in the time of Achav, for one reason or another, that was a harmonious society. The Gemara says, Shalonimsa Dilaturi. Nobody informed about anybody else. Nobody spoke Lashon Hora about anybody else. Achav sent out, I'm looking for Eliyahu. Where is Eliyahu? Nobody volunteered any information. So the Gemara says that when Achav went to war, he was a great warrior king, of a successful warrior king. When he went to war, there were no casualties amongst his army. But when David HaMelech went to war, so David HaMelech is the great king of Israel, he's the author of Tehillim, he's the head of the Sanhedrin, he's David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayom, he's the greatest, right? They had tremendous casualties in all the battles. Because the Gemara says, because in the time of David, they disputed with each other, they said Lashon Hara about each other, they informed against each other. God doesn't like that. So, Godol HaSholom, great is peace, that even when Jews are pagans, but if somehow there is a society of peace between them, so then somehow the situation will not be lost. It's not disastrous. The Meshech Chochma, Reb Meir Simcha HaKohen, says, one of his great insights, he says that the angel said at the Red Sea, Halolo of the Avodah Zarah, Halolo of the Avodah Zarah. They are worshiping Avodah Zarah, the Jews are worshiping the Egyptians. Why you pick on them, why not on the other ones? So what was the... What saved the Jews? So he says, because they were united. They were together. They had a common purpose. And they felt responsibility one for another. So he says there are just prophetic, frightening words. So he says, Afilu im yiu rov Yisrael machalalei Shabbos chas v'sholom. Even if the majority of the Jewish people will desecrate the Sabbath, God forbid. Yoveh Hashem sloach lohem. God will forgive them. If their society is all right. If there's a sense of peace within themselves. If there's a sense of unity within themselves. Because that's Godol HaShalom. Look how great peace is. Look what it can overcome. Look how many failings it can overcome. If there is that sense. So the Rabbonu Shalom says, Omer amokam kavi yochol, eini yochol lishlot bahem, kiven shar sholom bahem. I'm not going to touch them. Because there's peace between themselves. Godol ha-sholom usnua ha-machlokas, the Gemara says. Machlokas, that's the most hated thing. And machlokas is the thing that tears us apart. Tears us apart, day in and day out. And there are people that look for a machlokas. They look for the trouble. They're always looking on the other one. Yeah, there are posters every day hung on the street here. Where it says, Snua, God hates it. A lot of the things that happen to us, unfortunately, and I'm not a prophet, and I'm not a political commentator, and I don't know anything more than you do, but in my heart I've always felt that a lot of the troubles that we have are simply because of the way we behave. That's just the way it is. We're unable to tolerate each other. They're unable to, allow it to let somebody spit in front of me so that somehow that person can be saved. So we don't even let a guy change the lane in front of us when we're driving. They're honking two blocks away. Because he sees that a guy may want to change the lane. So he honks right away. Godol HaSholom, in my humble estimation, would be traffic without the horn. Just let it happen, right? Back off a little. And that's what Chazal said. But Chazal also answered that every sholom has to have tochocha with it. Tochocha means not just reproof, it has to have a lesson to it. A peace without a lesson, again, pacifism without purpose. Pacifism that is just plain weakness, that destroys us. Kol sholom she'eni mo tochocho eino sholom, Chazal said. Every piece that does not have within it a lesson, not have something that you can take away with it, that's not true. That won't last. That's weakness. That's not peace. Ein sholom yotze mitoch meriva. But Chazal said, but from arguments you never get shalom. So it depends. Depends how you tell somebody something. How you try to teach the lesson. What's the language? What's the body language? How do you do it? I think I mentioned last week that I knew in my youth a man who was then very elderly, who was a member of the Chofetz Chaim's Kolel in Eish Hashok. It must have been the 1870s. He was a very old man when I knew him. So he told me once that, when the Chofetz Chaim had to, if you missed for a few days, you didn't come to learn, or he was dissatisfied with, so he would call you in, And he would say, not to you. He'd turn around, and like he was talking to the wall, and he says, I don't know, he says, you know, there's a student here that doesn't come. I don't know, maybe he has problems. He never comes to talk to me. Maybe, do you know him? He knew him very well. He knew he was talking to him. He said, do you know him? Maybe you could tell me what's bothering him. So they all got the lesson. I had a Rebbe, Rabbi Rogoff, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. So Rabbi Rogoff was the kindest, gentlest man in the world. He was such a tzaddik. And we were all American ball players, you know, 14, 15 years old in the class. And, you know, it was a mismatch, like, from the beginning. But he loved us, and we loved him, so we never wanted to hurt him. So, but he was very nearsighted, so he never wore glasses, and he was very nearsighted. He couldn't see past, 3 feet in front of him. So he would call the roll. In the whole 2.5 years that I was in the class, no one was ever absent. Because they would always answer, here, yeah, Rebbe, I'm here. No one was ever absent. But the worst punishment that we ever had, how he maintained discipline, was that he called you in, so he wouldn't talk to you in the room, he'd take you in the clothes closet, because he didn't want anybody else to see you. So it was called the closet treatment. Right? So, but that ended it, you never went back again. And so he was the soul of peace and harmony, but nevertheless he was able to control. Just because of the fact that there was the tochocha, and the tochocha was that nobody wanted to make him feel bad, right? Until then, we would always have July 4th off as a day from the yeshiva. He didn't know anything about July 4th. So he would have shir, so we all came to shir. Because nobody had the guts to tell him that July 4th, you know, you're putter from learning Torah on July 4th. So we all came. So when I look back at it, with his kindness, with his gentleness, with his peaceful methods, he accomplished more than anybody that would have held a whip over us. Nobody from that class ever deserted. Nobody left us. That's Godel HaSholem. We say in Kaddish and at the end of Davening, Oseh Sholem Bimromov, God who makes peace in the heavens. What do the heavens need peace for? What does that mean? The Gemara itself says, Elyonim Shein Lohem Lokino Velosino Velotacharus Velorivos Machlokas. And the angels don't. What are you talking about? And still they need peace? So the Gemara here says an insight, so to speak, into heaven itself. That heaven also has different powers, different layers. It's got to work. Our whole universe is one enormous piece of harmony. Otherwise, one little thing goes wrong and goodbye. Right? Then, you know, you go crashing into the sun. They figured out that the distance of the Earth to the sun is exactly perfect, that it shouldn't burn up and it shouldn't freeze. It'd be off 1 degree either way. There cannot be life on this Earth. And the whole universe is like that, perfectly balanced. So that's Oseh Sholem Bimromov. God made a harmonious universe. And it's harmonious in a place where there is no jealousy. But you'll notice the rabbis always looked for jealousy everywhere. The famous story of the sun and the moon, that the sun and the moon were created equal size, and the moon said, you know, how can we both be the same size? So God said, okay, then you'll be smaller. So the rabbis in that metaphor meant to tell us this lesson. That no matter how great you are, right, there's always room for these bad characteristics that can undermine you. So if Oseh Sholem Bimromov, of God who makes the perfect harmony in his world, what about our world where there is jealousy and where there is hatred and where there is dispute and where there is all of these differences? Certainly here, The measure of a person has to be in shalom, in peace, and how a person deals with it. The rabbis asked the question, if shalom is so great, how come the Torah talks about war so many times? Very good question. Not only about war, Jewish wars. There's a Milchemes Mitzvah, a war that you're supposed to fight. There's a Milchemes Rishus, a war that you're allowed to fight. Wars of self-defense, wars of conquest. Yeshua comes into the land of Israel. Moshe makes war with Sichon and Og. If peace is such a virtue. So in the war itself, we have a halacha that poskim b'shalom. You're not allowed to go to war without attempting to make peace first. Without attempting to settle the matter first. With non-violent means. A war is a last resort. But the Gemara says the wars led to peace. Sometimes, that's the Gemara's opinion, sometimes the milchama is the only method left to achieve peace afterwards. The Gemara talks about war against evil, for instance, not to have made war against Hitler. Not to have conducted the Cold War against Stalin and the Russians. Not to defend ourselves against the Intifadas. That would have all been suicidal. And therefore, the war becomes the instrument for the ultimate peace. The question the Talmud always raises is, what do you do after the war? And in most of human history, after the war has not been a success. Wars have been more of a success than after the war. The Gemara is really astounded that asks, V'chiyesh Odom, Sone Shalom, are there people in the world who hate peace? And the Gemara answers, yes. The Gemara is not naive. Esav Sone Shalom. Esav was a man achar b'chatichya, that's his business. Well, I mean, West Point goes out of business. Sam Seir goes out of business if there are no wars. What are you going to do? The great worry that occurred in the world economy after the fall of the Soviet Union is what's going to be with the armament industry. So God help that the armament industry is still flourishing. There was a German general by the name of Bernardi who in 1909 wrote a book in which he said that war is the best thing that can happen. Was they justified the war 5 years before it began. The book was very widely read in Europe. It had great popularity. And he said it would cleanse Europe. All the dross would be burned off. The general of the Austrian army, General Conrad, at the beginning of the First World War in August 1914, said what Europe needs is a good short war. So what God gave them was a bad long war. A war that till today affects us. 90 years later, we still live in the shadow of that great bloodbath. But there were people who said, that's wonderful, right? They justified it. And they went off to war in cheering crowds. No one saw the 20 million dead ahead of them. No one saw what were the fall of the empires. They destroyed themselves. So the Gemara recognizes it. The Gemara says there are those that are for it. And therefore we have to be careful not to fall into that trap. Chazal say, "Machnifim l'rishoyim b'olam hazeh mipnei darkei shalom." In this world, even to evil people, machnifim means to not to say the whole truth to them, not really to a certain extent to flatter them, because of darkei shalom, because truth is an overriding value. So we have halachas, for instance, because of darkei shalom. The halacha is people make an eruv, right? Eruv chatzeros. We live in a big apartment building. We all want to carry in the lobby. So we make an eruv between ourselves. How do we make the eruv? We take a challah, a matzah, whatever it is, we put it in one person's house, we all gather together, and we say, you know, this is our common matzah, well, you can all come and eat it whenever you want, etc. And that's the ritual of making the Erev, etc. So what if the man, it was in this man's apartment for years that he had the Erev in his house. Now new people come and they say, we don't want the Erev by him, we want to take the Erev out and put it by us. But the rabbis say it's not allowed because of Darkei Sholem. Because people will say, oh, they took it out because they must know something about him. He's not such a pious Jew. We have to take it away from him. The Gemara says even you're not allowed to take it away even if the man dies and his heir wants to keep the Erev in the apartment, so then you have to leave it there too. Because that's Darkei Sholem. The halacha is that Kohen gets the first aliyah, right? The halacha also is that the Kohen can give up the right to the first aliyah. He can say, you know, give it to my brother-in-law, he's a Yisrael. But on Shabbos and Yom Tov, he's not allowed to do that. Because on Shabbos and Yom Tov, there are a lot of people in shul, and people will say, how come he gave it to his brother-in-law? Why didn't he give it to me? I could use the first aliyah. I also have a brother-in-law. So may Darkei Sholem, we don't allow the Kohen to waive his right to have an aliyah. It's one of the reasons why you should never tell Kohanim to leave the shul in order to play with the aliyahs. It's not his right anymore because Darkei Sholem trumps over his right to assign the aliyah. The Gemara says they used to have a canal, an irrigation canal. So who had the right to take the water first? So the Gemara says, well, they did it in the order of closeness to the source of the canal. The Gemara says, why? Because that was Darkei Sholem. That's, what does it mean, Darkei Sholem? Then there's nothing to argue about. Because this guy's closer, so he's first, and this guy's next, and the order is established. But if there is no established order, right, so then they'll call in the lawyers. Everybody will say, I should be first. So the halacha, because of the principle of Darkei Sholem, establishes norms on all in order to lessen the problem of machlokas and to increase Darkei Sholem. The Gemara says we have a rule, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, that anything that's within four amos of me, I'm kone, belongs to me. So let's say if I walk down the street and there's an item laying in the street and I want to acquire it, so even though I don't pick it up, if it's within my dalat amos, the rabbi said it's mine. That's because of Darkei Sholem. Because otherwise people will wrestle on the floor, they'll punch themselves, they'll fight about it. So in order to avoid all of this, we have Darkei Sholem. And that's really the continuation of what we discussed last week of Jocheo Darkei Noam. Jocheo Darkei Noam, if you have ways of pleasantness, then V'chol Nesivoseho Sholom. So then it leads to the path of peace. Then you have an understanding of peace and of harmony. But a generation that is querulous, a generation that is not willing to compromise, that's not willing to push itself to act sometimes even against its own self-interest, but then that generation finds itself far away from Shalom. Shalom is God's name. So in effect, it's a departure from the Lord Himself. Thank you for coming. And next week, the topic will be family.